And we're live. Welcome, everybody, to your favorite day of the week. I am Anthony Irwin, joined, as always, on these fine Friday afternoons. Well, I guess technically it's Friday morning, your time. Closer to Friday afternoon, my time, by Pete Zayas of the Laker Film Room podcast. Pete, we are within a week. We are days away from the NBA draft. And this weekend, before the NBA draft, is historically one of those weekends where we start to learn a whole bunch. Mm-hmm. So have you battened down the hatches? Have you stored up all the caffeine that we're going to need? How are you holding up?
I'm great, man. My girl's on a family vacation this weekend. So It's like me by myself. And like, honestly, when it comes to like when all the transactions happen and all of that, like, I love it. Right. Like it's so, yeah, I'm good. I'm ready for this weekend. Ready for any news to drop, man. How you doing?
Well, I'm a little nervous because it's Father's Day weekend, which happy Father's Day weekend in advance.
Thank you.
but it's Father's Day weekend and I agreed to play golf tomorrow morning. Now it's really, really early in the morning, but it's going to be like a Saturday before Father's Day. It's going to be a long round. I am extremely nervous that something is going to break on like the seventh hole or something like
that. I'm guessing that golf course would be pretty busy too, right? I'm guessing that's
popular. It's probably going to be like a 4 or 5 hour round. We're hoping to get out early enough to kind of beat a lot of the crowd, right? Like our tee time is at 7:30 or so. Which, look, waking up for golf is very different from waking up for like on a normal day. So like I actually enjoy waking up for golf and getting the round, not out of the way, but taken care of and, you know, coming back and having the whole day to then scroll aimlessly on Twitter and just, you know, spend hours upon hours texting people, texting agents, texting you and Jovan to see how we feel about all of this stuff. And that's basically how my Father's Day weekend is going to go. And hopefully Jen understands and the kids understand. But with all of that said, and with all that kind of out of the way, we have to dive in to some of the things that we think we're going to hear about, things that we've already heard, things we would like to hear about. And everything in between. So today on the show, we're going to be talking about Dave McMenamin's recent report about what Luka's team, at the very least, is saying. And I thought there were some very telling quotes in that piece. Luka Doncic himself went on the record. It is in the public domain for the kind of center that he wants. I think that was a very significant moment. I also want to debate, Pete, the extent to which Luka's voice should matter in all of this, and at what point Rob Pelinka starts actually compiling a roster that fits his basketball ideologies, which we don't really know a whole ton about. So we're going to discuss that. I want to just have kind of a confidence check-in as we kind of crawl towards these decisions that have to be made. And then there was a name just this morning who popped back up. I reported a little while ago that I thought the Beef Stew, based on some of the things I was hearing, Beef Stew might be made available because of the cap crunch at the center position coming via Jalen Duren's restricted free agency. So and then we just found out Sam Amick, I'm sorry. One day I will know how to say your name, but, he of The Athletic is reporting that the Pistons have put, Isaiah Stewart, Beef Stew, on the trade block. He is somebody who I think makes a whole bunch of sense for the Lakers on a variety of levels and for a variety of factors. So we'll discuss, his potential, you know, addition or whatever, and how you feel about that direction as the Lakers. I think starting point is the center spot. So we will go ahead and get to all of that. Quick reminder before we do, please hit that like button, please hit that subscribe button, turn on notifications for the show, turn on notifications for YouTube so you get the notifications for the show. And then if you guys are listening to the show in podcast form, please subscribe to this podcast and Pete's podcast for that matter, wherever it is that you get podcast, preferably on Odyssey, but I truly do not care. I am pro all podcast platforms, except Spotify. No, I'm kidding. let's go ahead and dive on in though. Oh, also today's show is brought to you in video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA. Use that promo code and make a $5 lineup of your own to get free $50 worth of free lineups. Prize Picks has been really fun for the World Cup. I just can't say how much I've enjoyed it. Last night, made a little, added to Avery's college fund by way of Mexico's win. So that was,
hey, all right.
Yeah, I'll take it. All right. So Pete, let's dive on in. And, I'm sure you and Darius have talked about it a little bit on your show. Luka Doncic, I think, has kind of sort of found his voice here in ways that he didn't necessarily do too much of while he was in Dallas. And I thought the most telling quote that we've gotten so far was from Luka's camp. And it was, they told us, wait for summer of 26, wait for summer of 26. Now the summer of 26 is here. We are happy that we are here. It's time to get to work, basically, paraphrasing. And I've already explained how I took that quote on the show. So I'm going to get out of the way and just kind of let you explain how that landed on your doorstep.
Well, nothing that he said was particularly surprising, right? I believe that he should have a good deal of influence, right? And that the center who can jump high. Really, the only thing that stood out to me was after watching the playoffs, like, I really want a five outlook, and I want that to at least be in the rotation. And yep. Luka wants lob threats, but like, we can't build a team that's anybody else's roster, right? Like we can't emulate anybody else. Like, we've got the best pick and roll guy in the league, and it's a little different than Brunson, right? Who's more of a scorer off of those. He's not quite the level of passer, but yeah, of course you want to give Luka a lob threat and give him shooters and all of that. It's just, I didn't hear any of what he said, like nothing of what he said was on really on the defensive end. And I do think that your point about, like, you know, it's up to our GM and Pelinka to have basketball beliefs of their own that they can supplement with that. But I like that Luka is speaking up. I want there to be pressure on the front office. There needs to be pressure on the front office this year, right? Like, and I was one of the leading voices saying that I actually believe that saving up all of your money and resources to make a big swing this summer is the right thing to do, that there's a value in that concentrated mass, that even something like the Kessler stuff, the ability to be like, yeah, we could throw an offer at your way and it's not going to fuck up the rest of our free agency. We can still do other things because we have so much cap space. So I was behind the idea and I'm still behind the idea, but you got to execute on it. Right. And so, so it's put up or shut up time. And I'm glad that Luka's, saying it out loud.
I took this to mean, to at least a certain extent, that he and Rob, or his camp and Rob, at some point said something to the tune of like, well, could we do this now? And was kind of sort of told no, because that impacts what we can do then.
I think they tried with Mark Williams, right? Like, I think there were attempts, there would not be nearly the capability that there would be this summer.
Well, like the what I go back to is last summer, which I think everybody being realistic about what the Lakers were trying to do and trying to keep available. I thought last summer was a perfectly good summer haul, given the restraints that they had placed on themselves, the guardrails that they had placed for themselves. And so like that nuance is critical here in analyzing that summer, but I think it's also critical in painting the picture of what has happened since, where that was a perfectly fine summer for the type of summer that the Lakers were going to allow themselves to have. But that does, however, mean that that team would be an amount below expectation wise where they needed to be going into last season, right? Like if you aren't willing to go all in, if you aren't going to expend every avenue that you can for the sake of preparation for this summer, which is now here, that inherently means that roster is not going to be as good as it possibly could have been going into the season and more importantly, going into the playoffs, right? And so, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. If I could interject, though, you have to weigh it against the, okay, well, what was possible, right? If they didn't have those guardrails on, what mm-hmm. team could they have built and could that have been good enough to win a title, right? And so the best player that was sort of out there in the ether that I can think of is Andrew Wiggins, right? And if there's another mm-hmm. route, you know, bring him up. But I don't think that we were an Andrew Wiggins away from winning a championship either. And so, like, I would have been pissed off in punting year. I hate the idea of punting year when you've got freaking Luka Doncic on the team and still LeBron mm-hmm. and all of that, right? But I also hadn't heard any alternative that was like, well, if we go down this road, we actually have a really good shot, you know? And so I do just want to throw that out there that it's like, it was more compelling because I didn't hear an alternative that was like, yeah, that's a title team.
My one retort to that is that how many moves have the Lakers made that we didn't hear anything about, you know? So like, it's really sure. kind of impossible to say what Great actually point. Was or wasn't available.
Sure.
I would, you know, just kind of my thing is, and the reason that I think that quote from Dave's piece was really important was I think Luka knew and like not being mean to Ayton or anything like this, but I think Luka knew that in terms of the caliber of center that you need to win a championship, Ayton is a tier or two below that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, without getting into the specifics of who could or couldn't have been had over the course of the year or at last summer or whatever, who would have been a tier or two above where Ayton is. I think Luka was very cognizant of the fact that like, okay, we're going to do the best that we can with this roster. We're going to get through last year. But now, like you're saying, and I think where this sentiment is coming from is like, okay, we did that. Now, this better be worth it.
You know? You can't just continue to kick the can and be like, going to make some moves around the edges and we've got assets still saved up. We can make a move at the trade deadline. Like all that shit's got to be in the past now. Like I was willing to back that in service of hey, we can make really big moves if we do it all at once. That makes sense to me. But if you don't, then that even blows up last year's rationale.
Yeah. And so like, you know, I think what I keep coming back to, and we'll get to the confidence check-in a little bit later in the show, but what I keep coming back to is like those summers where like I could kind of understand where Rob, I disagree with it vehemently, but I could kind of understand where Rob was coming from, where it was like, I don't know how I can build a championship contender when the starting point is LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And Anthony Davis is probably best at the center spot, can't shoot well enough to be the kind of four making the amount of money that he was making then. Mm-hmm. Like, I can kind of understand where Rob would be like, all right, let's just contend as best we can, but let's also maintain that flexibility. And then Luka Doncic shows up and it's like, we don't have the assets to make the team, build the roster that you would need to compete at the level that you were even a year before you got here, right? Where you were in the championship with Dallas going up against Boston. It's going to take some time to accumulate some flexibility to now arrive here. And it's like, all right, we have done that stuff. It was unfortunate. And it might just be that the best chance that they ever had with Luka was last year when LeBron was playing at the level that he was playing at. And when Austin was making the amount of money that he was making, like it might just be that last year was the year to see about a Wiggins deal or go all in to try to get whatever center it was that you could have. That might be how this plays out. But let's, you know, and I think this is what Luka and his camp are kind of saying is like, let's make sure that we know that definitively, right? Let's not leave any stone unturned here as we attempt to build out this roster. And I think the next kind of interesting step here is Luka's vision for this versus Rob's, not necessarily versus, but like, you know, working alongside Rob's vision of this, JJ Redick's vision of this, which I think is also an interesting factor here as well. And like where I keep on asking myself is like, All right. I can understand why Luka would think first and foremost about the thing that he is absolutely elite of and build out his basketball vision from that point forward. I can understand why JJ Redick would think of like being super creative to get open shots out of sets and stuff like that, and wanting to play kind of like the Boston Celtics with the amount of switching that he has done, given the way that he talks about basketball analytically on his previous podcast. I can understand that vision. The part that I am just racking my brain over and losing hair over is, what is Rob Pelinka's vision other than staying employed? And that's the like that's the number one question that I have going into this run. So like, how confident are you in those visions meshing? What sense do you have of Rob Pelinka's vision?
So I actually think him and Redick are fairly similar and on the same page. Yeah, like he made
too much. So
yeah, no, I right. These are both guys that were shooters. We always forget that Pelinka was a pretty high level basketball player. He came off the bench for the Fab Five Michigan team, you know, and was a big part of that rotation. And his comment about proof of concept, you know, how they did the postseason press conference with him and JJ, and talking about how post Kennard trade, the way that they played was kind of proof of concept. And they'd talked about like having three quarterbacks. They referred to like Luka, Austin, and LeBron as sort of being three quarterbacks. And I don't want to say it's derogatory, but it's more like this is unusual to have this much shot creation and on-ball shot creation. And but it's the team that we have, and we're going to make it work as best as we can type of thing. But I think what they really want are the two quarterbacks, where it'd be Luka and Austin in this instance, and then put shooting and lob threats around them and enough defense and youth and athleticism, right, to that can run the floor, and let's go to work. And so I think that the way Pelinka sees things is actually fairly close to the way Redick sees things. And your quip about what's his vision aside from staying employed, I think that his strategy has always been, I'm going to get my star player what he wants, and then I'm going to get my coach what he wants, right? So it's it wasn't Rob Pelinka that was the huge Torian Prince fan. That was Darvin Ham, obviously, right? And but if you're making the star happy,
why you got to bring up old shit?
There's a reason for it. If you're making the star happy and you're making the coach happy, and it doesn't work, you're like, why are you looking at me? I got you guys.
What do I
like,
do?
This is what you guys wanted, type of thing. That I actually hate that about kind of our setup and sort of the like, oh well, if you just make those two parties happy, he's kind of politically safe in a lot of
ways.
Totally
agree.
You know what I mean? That it's like, but in this instance, I actually do think, and they talk about it a decent amount about how kind of simpatico they are. And so we'll find out what the benefits and what the holes are in that. But I do think this is the first time they've gotten to build the team that they want to build. We'll see if it's good enough.
Isaiah Stewart doesn't fit those ideologies. And yet I think he fills some very important needs for the Lakers. And the reason that I think his name is a fascinating one to bring up here is because I think Isaiah Stewart, like, I love the fact that he is impossible to move. He's got a center of gravity that is basically underground. He's got really long arms. He's the meanest MF-er in the league, right? Somebody who, when he's on the court, other teams at any given moment are like, that dude could cheap shot me into oblivion, and he's going to be ready to fight if I take the wrong swing or set the wrong screen on your guy, right? Mm-hmm. I like that he can also space the floor. He does have injury concerns, was not particularly impressive in these playoffs when he was available. And he's short. He's not a very tall dude. However, you know, with a lot of the things that the Lakers, I think, are going to need to be able to do when you're going up against a Victor Wembanyama, when you're going up against the rim protection that OKC has, when you're going up against a team built around Nikola Jokic, and with the front court firepower that like the Minnesota Timberwolves have, let alone what Utah is building. You know, if they do keep Kessler, that is a big, imposing front court that is going to be really difficult to score on in the interior. Like you said earlier, having a five-out option, I think, is going to be really important. And I know that Stewart would probably cost some legitimate capital because Detroit really likes him. but they're also up against it. And this is one of those spots where you can kind of use that situation to your benefit. What do you think of Isaiah Stewart as a potential trade target?
So I really like beef stew. On top of everything that you said,
the player and the food.
I like both. Actually, I like both. Yes.
I'm a big beef stew guy. Yeah.
on top of everything you said about him, he's really fast. Like, he's the type of guy that can show high on a pick
ask and LeBron.
Roll. And get yes, especially when he's full of rage. But he's a guy that can run the pick and roll coverages that Redick actually likes to show high and show at the level of the ball. But you got to be able to like show up high and then get your ass back to the rim and recover. And he does that wonderfully. And he you know puts 2 feet in the ground and elevates and uses those long arms and you know can get blocks around the rim despite not being very tall. And so he's a guy that Darius and I disagree on, right? Because I maybe have a toxic, like, I like the Draymonds and the beeps too. I like the guys that are a little bit unhinged. I think there's some value in that. But I do think he's a backup. And yeah, I think from a cost, like, he makes $15.5 million, I believe. And I think that our backup center spot is probably filled with Jackson, right? Like, his cap hold's only going to be like $4.5 million. So, and I don't think he'd sign for a ton more than that, but it's not going to be 15 a year, right? So I sort of see it as a, we don't have a job vacancy at the spot that Stewart would fill. And so we while could, I like him,
but
we could, but then we'd
probably
have to pay,
don't.
Yeah, we'd have to pay $10 million more for the right to have beef stew, which then takes $10 million off of the table for the wing that we need or the A1 center that we need and all of that. That it's more about how you divide up the whole thing than anything than me. I'm like I really like Isaiah Stewart. It's just I don't really see him as a trade target for us, even though I do think he's gettable for the reasons that you said.
Yeah, the concept of a trade that I've been kind of kicking around in my head is because the word out there is that they kind of sort of like Rui if they aren't able to retain Tobias. So if you could do some kind of a sign and trade where you send Rui over there, you get Stewart back for limited resources beyond that, right? You're going player for player, backup for backup, essentially. Like, I think that would make some sense. It would probably mean, at the very least, telling Jackson, if you come back here, you're going to have to compete for minutes with Stewart,
right?
Which maybe he wouldn't be all that interested in. I don't think him getting that Slovenian citizenship was any kind of accident. I think he kind of knows what he's doing there. He's a smart man, at least in that regard. And so, I see what you're saying. But I also, like, if we're talking about, because I think a lot of times the center, the center position centers what kind of lineup that you're building. Mm-hmm. And the Lakers are going to look for some kind of spaced out center this offseason. And I think if they use like the biannual or like some smaller exception or let alone a veteran minimum on their stretch five center, we know that guy is not going to be able to play in the playoffs. Whereas I think if that spaced out center is Stewart, I know I would be confident with that guy on the court in the playoffs.
Even after the playoffs that he had, he just got outplayed by B-Ball Paul, who I do like, but like that's part of the reason he's on the block is because they got Paul Reed who played better than he did at $5 million.
I'm going to be completely honest here. I thought everything that was wrong with Detroit this year didn't start at the center spot. I thought it was the lack of creativity from Cade and from people outside of Cade. Like,
the perimeter
centers have their lives set for them, right? And this is why, like, we'll talk about A-list centers here in a second. This is why, like, with Luka, I'm very confident that the Lakers are going to get the center that improves their team next year because Luka makes life easier on that center. And if you're the backup center on a team that has Cade Cunningham and fuck all beyond that, as far as like creativity, then your minutes out there are probably going to be like with players who they're hoping can make life easier on you, you know, and I just, you know, the Caris LeVerts of the world, you know, and I just, I don't think he was necessarily placed in a spot to succeed. And like, I think Jalen Duren suffered from some of this too last year. That offense just became so predictable that it was just difficult for them to continue to succeed. But that's Detroit. And I think like the Lakers are like the opposite of that. Like we just talked about a second ago, they have almost too much creativity. So whenever Stewart is on the court, his life will be made like so much easier than it was last year. And I'm actually pretty confident that he'd be an even better player with the Lakers than he was with Detroit. But I think it's also completely fair to point out that the Lakers have limited resources here, limited cap space, and you know, bringing him in here uses some of that cap space and resources. Let's talk about A-list centers because there aren't very many of them available. I would love to know how Luka defines what an A-list center is. Like Daniel Gafford, I don't think is an A-list center by most people's definition, but does Luka think so, seeing as he made a finals with him? I am of the opinion, I don't know if you disagree, but I am of the opinion that this is where Rob Pelinka is going to start his offseason. When he has the most resources at his disposal, he's going to focus on, like you said earlier, making Luka happy, keeping the coach happy, all that stuff too. How do you see this playing out? Like there aren't any basically A-list centers available who don't have major questions. Like even Walker Kessler is somebody who you and I both like a lot. He played 5 games last year.
Sure.
You know, so well,
yeah. Yeah, no, this is the thing I'm most nervous about. And I do agree that it's where they need to start their offseason precisely because it's where the supply is at the thinnest, right? Like,
yeah.
So Jalen Duren is also a restricted free agent, but I have no expectation that Detroit and their cap situation and all of that has any interest in letting him walk. And even with Kessler, like, I think it's likelier than the vast majority of restricted free agent situations. But at the end of the day, the Lakers don't have control of that situation. And that's the thing that is concerning with this is that to be able to get that guy, he's not available in unrestricted free agency. The best guys are restricted and those guys rarely move. And then like Jared Allen, for example, is a guy I know the Lakers have kicked the tires on a few times, but it's like, they've got Donovan Mitchell and James Harden. Why are you trading your lob threat five? I know they've got money issues, but if you're going to build around two high level pick and roll guards, are you really going to trade Jared Allen? Like, no, trade somebody else off of the bench if you need to alleviate your money issues and still be a good basketball team. You know what I mean? And
they're trying to move Schroeder. I think they're trying to move Strus, but
yeah,
I think guys those like two that. Guys are likelier to move than like you're talking about.
Exactly. Right. It speaks to like Allen would be way more difficult to replace than those guys would be. And so, you know, for example, we talked about Miles Turner a couple of times. If Luka wants a lob threat, that probably kills that, doesn't it? Yeah. You know, are we making a trade for Daniel Gafford? And I agree, he's not an A-list center. There are a lot of guys out there like him that Luka could make look a tier better than they actually are, but that's not what Luka's looking for. He's like, I want somebody to make my life easier too. And in this instance, I don't think it's wrong. Like, if you look at I don't think it's just Luka looking at things through what's best for him. I agree that it's what's best for the team as well. You look at the conference finalists, it's all, every single team had a premium high level five guy that Lakers need to get that. And so
how many times have we made that point? Bro, like, you know,
yeah.
Away from here. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is far and away, like, I felt my anxiety go up even when you were asking me that question. This is easily the thing that I'm like most nervous about over the course of the summer.
Yeah. That it's, I think, going to define this summer, you know, and like maybe you could say, all right, not to continue to beat a dead horse here, but like maybe you bring in a Stewart and you say, hopefully a center comes available over the course of the season. Right. But like,
we just talked about this in the first part of this. Like,
I know
like,
that's why
like, you can't like, come out of this summer and be like, ah, well, you know, hopefully this was the summer that shit was supposed to shake free. Right. And so it needs, right. I'm not trying to doom and gloom, but I'm just saying that like, no, that's not going to fly. You can't come, you can't be July 15th. And that's what you're telling Luka.
Right. And that's exactly where I'm at is like, it, you know, if Rob Pelinka sits there in his post off season presser or his preseason presser and tries to tell anybody, you know, we can't buy a house that wasn't for sale. Well, hell you no. told us the real estate market was going to be great. You told us about the real yes. estate market in the summer of 26 and you planned everything and you, for lack of a better term, wasted other real estate cycles mm-hmm. to get to the summer of 26. So you like those excuses, those explanations and whatever like area in between there, those two words you want to use, those aren't going to fly. And they specifically aren't going to fly with Luka, somebody who, by the way, you know, yeah, he signed his extension. He's going to be a Laker longer term, but he's a year or so away from those conversations popping back up again.
He's a free agent, you know? 28. We've got him for yeah. 2 years guaranteed, and that's it.
Right. And so, yeah, this summer is absolutely critical. I keep going back to the Walker Kessler thing, and this is a conversation that I believe has happened already between the Lakers and Utah, where it's like, look, we could sign him to an offer sheet that fucks up both of our books. Neither of us would be happy to get him at the number that we would have to sign him to really make you think about it. His agent isn't thrilled with him continuing to be in Utah. Let's try to find a way that, sure, maybe neither of us walk away from this room feeling particularly happy about how things transpired, mm-hmm. but maybe that's a path that, like, some kind of a sign and trade. And yes, it hard caps the Lakers at the first apron. Yes, it would kind of complicate things as they try to build out the rest of the roster and re-sign guys that they have currently on their roster. But that's the scenario I'm probably focused the most on is some kind of a sign and trade there with Kessler, who, by the way, again, like is kind of a theoretical A-lister. You know, like
I like him. I've been watching tape on him a lot over yeah. the last week.
There's a lot to like.
Yeah, I think he's like, I understand. And even the 5 games thing, like how many games did they sit players out last year?
Yeah.
On, like how many games could he have played on a real team? He tore his labrum, you know?
Yeah, like. Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing is that, like, he got a surgery that very quickly eliminated him from the season that maybe other teams would have been like, well, let's see what other options that we have available to us. Whereas the Jazz were like, oh, darn.
Sure.
Parts. Mm-hmm. Shoot. Which is part of why he and his camp have had the friction that they have had with Utah, yeah. right? Like, he wanted to be physically available and he wanted to go to Indiana and he wanted to be on a team that he felt values him more than say Utah has. And that's kind of the starting point of all of this. And so
also a lot of these guys, Matt, like they're way more competitive than we give them credit for. We talk a lot about their contracts and how they want opportunity and things like that. But like Walker Kessler has played pretty much his entire career for a team that's trying to lose on purpose. If you've got any competitive spirit at all, that fucking sucks. And to do yeah. that, and he's been a good soldier about it the whole time, and now they want to fuck with his money. Oh, well, you only played 5 games last year. It's like, motherfucker, that you wanted guys sitting out. You know what I mean? Like, I could see how that would get really old, and you would want to be like, no, I want to actually play real basketball for a team that wants to win, and I don't appreciate that, like, I've been a good soldier, and now you're trying to use that against me and be like, oh, well, you deserve this number instead of that number.
What did you make of the 4-year or the 5-year, $140 million contract that I think it was Tim McMahon reported is sitting on the table already? What did you make of that one? Because I had kind of a funny response to it.
I thought it was a little low. I expected him to get a number in the low 30s. And if I remember correctly, it was like 28 per year. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I thought that was a little bit low.
I think that's the kind of thing that a team leaks out there to be like, and the nut, like it being framed around the total amount of money and not the average earning per year mm-hmm. was, I thought, really telling here. Where that felt very much like the Angels being like, look, man, we offered him $140 million.
And that's what they do.
Yeah.
Danny Ainge, and I'm sure Austin Ainge is just the same. They've always used the media to play hardball with their own guys. Like, that's a cutthroat couple of dudes right there that does not care at all about their player. They're gonna fuck with Keyonte George, who had a great year this year too. And yep. So, yep. And they've always used the media, and who are more than happy to carry water for them.
Would you, if you were the Lakers, go to Walker and be like, "Hey, that $140 million, how would you be interested in that over 4 years instead of five? Or would that be too high for you?"
It's both high for me, but it's also like basic economics, supply and demand. The conversation we just had about who the good fives are, like I would be really happy with Walker Kessler or Jalen Duren. I would be happy with Jared Allen. I don't think Duren or Allen are available. There are other guys that I'd be happy with, but it's like that guy's a backup or that guy's not quite at that level. And so I don't see a ton of options at the five. And maybe that's just lack of imagination on my part and Lakers trade for somebody else that we haven't even talked about. It's possible, right? But like of the dudes available, like it's both high and also possibly necessary to be able to do that, because I just don't think there are other guys of that caliber actually available.
If you do that, you then, I believe, have to renounce LeBron and Rui for the first couple of days of free agency while that offer sheet sits there and you have 48 hours that you know Utah is going to use every minute of.
So I think your point, though, about like it being way likelier of a sign and trade, I don't think we would sign Kessler to an offer sheet and get him strictly off
and not know.
Right. And not know. You know? Right. Exactly. Yeah. And plus, at that point, like most of free agency is done at that point. Most of the offseason transactions are done at that point. So I think that's sort of the leverage Utah has of like, no, it'd have to be a sign and trade that if you wanted to do something like that. So I think they would have to agree to that rather than I hope we sign him to an offer sheet and Utah doesn't match.
Yeah. It's part of why I thought some of Dave's reporting about like LeBron coming in at a number in the 20s and Rui maybe being the odd man out was kind of telling, because that does then make the room, like maintain the room. Like if you do that, if you sign LeBron to a deal, let's say at 20, just to keep things at a nice round number, that brings, you know, that removes his cap hold, brings his cap allocation down to 20 from the 60 or whatever it currently sits at. So that gives you some flexibility there. Then if you renounce Rui and say, good luck going out and getting a better offer, you know, then that removes another, what is it, $24, $25 million of cap allocation there. We're supposed to get a decision on player options in the next 10 days or so from DeAndre Ayton and Marcus Smart. We know what Austin's decision is going to be, so like we can just kind of take that for granted. And I think there, like that opens up enough space to, you know, sign and trade Walker to a reasonable enough salary, right? I don't think it would cost the full 35 in this case if it's a sign and trade. And then I think that keeps you, depending on the number that Austin signs at, far enough below the first apron that you can actually have a feasible rest of your offseason and feasible rest of your year without it being the headache that it has been in the last few years. If that was kind of like the beginning of the offseason, how would you feel about it?
I'd feel good about that, right? Like you're not going to get a better player than LeBron James at $20 million. And one of the things about this offseason that I think the Lakers prioritized was replacing LeBron, not in a literal like this is the new star power forward that is in that spot, but just we've got good players under this number that if he's in that $15 to $20 million range, that's what the MLE is going to be. So if LeBron retires after next year, you can still replace at least the salary slot. And I would love to have an upgrade, you know, to Kessler, from Ayton to Kessler. I also like, we talked about this yesterday on the pod, me and Darius, and like, do you believe in the Luka, LeBron, Austin trio? Like, do you think they can get to, say it's Kessler, and take your pick that they're able to get some wing in that moves Marcus to the bench or at least duplicates him? Like, I don't know, man. We just watched the playoffs, and I think back to like the OG tip in game four, and OG kind of soared above Stephon Castle, who was way up in the air, Devin Vassell, who was way up in the air. I'm like, none of our perimeter players can get to that ball. Seriously, And yeah, between that and just the level of speed at the highest levels and the OKC series of just, I like all of our players and that trio, right? That's obviously a super skilled trio. I love me some Marcus Smart. He's always been one of my favorites. But when you add them up collectively, throw Kessler in there, who's got a great motor, but like, that's a kind of slow, unathletic team that I know that we don't have to run the race that everybody else is running necessarily, but we do have to at least keep up that. Mm-hmm. What do you believe in that trio's ability to, if you pick whoever you want on the other two spots in the closing five, that they can get there?
This is one of those things where, like you just talked about with Kessler, where it's like there just aren't very many options beyond that, right? Like, yeah, I wish the Lakers could be more athletic. Yeah, I like the Lakers explicitly stated that they would like to be more athletic, but mm-hmm. I also want them to be the best basketball team that they can realistically and feasibly be. And I just don't see a whole bunch of athleticism and creativity. Like we just talked about the Detroit Pistons, right? They are plenty athletic. Mm-hmm. They have athleticism oozing out the wazoo, but they were a quick exit because they didn't have the creativity,
the skill
necessary to get them there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like you either trade one for the other here. And I don't think, all right, here's how I'll put it. I don't think there's an athlete at $20-ish million a year who is athletic enough to make me feel better about losing LeBron's creativity if the Lakers need it.
We're not going to get a better player than LeBron James at $20 million. Right.
Yeah. And I guess more directly to answer your question, I actually really do believe in that trio based on what we saw from them in that final month when LeBron said, you know what? All right, Luka, Austin, y'all got you guys can operate on the ball. I'll handle the dive on the floor, take the charge, play the defense shit over here. Mm-hmm. And do I love relying on a 43-year-old to do that next year? Like, I'm not over the moon about it, but I just don't see very many alternatives, especially if you're turning down LeBron in the 20s. Like I said this on the show yesterday. I don't see how you get better as a basketball team when LeBron at $20 million is potentially on the table and you say, nah, we're good.
Would you rather have LeBron for 1 year at 20 than Rui for three in the mid to high teens?
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, because I like Rui. I really respect the growth that he has had as a Laker, right? Like turning himself into an absolute laser and all of that stuff. The thing that I worry about with Rui, I don't like players that you have to hold their hands to the extent that the Lakers have to hold his hand up there, mm-hmm. where it's like, nope, you go stand here. You shoot if it's this. You dribble if it's this. Yep. You defend by standing here. I don't trust his basketball IQ enough to have him be a cornerstone of a playoff team to the extent that he would have to be if you're choosing between him and LeBron.
That's fair. That's fair.
Let's talk about confidence with everything that we've kind of talked about here. How confident are you that the Lakers are going to be able to pull any or all of this off?
Let me go in a more optimistic direction here, because I've been a little more dour. I do think that this front office is very much built for a summer of optionality. Whether it was Kobe or when he was an assistant for Magic, and even into his tenure beyond as the Lakers president of basketball operations, one of the things that has always stood out about Plink is that if you go to him and say, hey, we want to accomplish this, he'll come back to you with five different scenarios of this is how we can accomplish that. And so between that and since they've targeted this offseason for so long, so much of the work on this is intel gathering, right? Like, is Kessler available? What is the situation there? What about this other guy that people like us, we can bullshit about it on a podcast, but it's an entirely different situation from like getting the intel. And since they planned on this all along, they better have been doing this work all along. And I trust them to have been doing that. And so between that, and I thought they were very creative last offseason in building kind of the best team that they could. Like, I don't start from a place of, you know, Palinka and his people are dumb and they don't know what the hell they're doing. I don't believe that at all. But So I do think that they work their best when they have a long time to plan something and they can sort of set up the pieces and knock them down. And I think that is exactly is this. But between the center spot and just sort of a what the hell does Pelinka believe in the first place, and do they have these blind spots to, yeah, they want to shoot, and you know, they thought the Kennard trade was proof of concept and they sort of want to build more guys like that. Are they going to put enough athletes on the floor to be able to compete with OKC and San Antonio, or at least keep up, right, with those type of teams? That's where my nervousness comes in. But I do have some degree of confidence that you give this group of people that long to formulate a plan and execute on it, they're going to do a pretty good job of it. Where are you at on that?
I obviously wish I was more confident.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I wish I and this is part of why last year's trade deadline kind of annoyed me, where it's like they put so much into the basket of this offseason that it's just so difficult to just completely build a roster that is good enough to like compete at the level that Luka Doncic and LeBron James and Austin Reeves and Lakers fans demand that it competes at. And with everything that they have to accomplish here, right? Like the center spot is obviously the first and foremost thing, but I don't like only having Marcus Smart as point of attack defense.
Right.
I don't love how slow they are on the wing, you know, and how many one-way players they still have. We look at the depth that like OKC and San Antonio and these teams have, to where like, you know, they're like 10th and 11th guys would be significant rotation players for the Lakers. I would like, you know, like how, you know, the Lakers haven't drafted well enough to do that, you know, and that's another thing that, you know, this upcoming draft is a critical one as well. There are actually some center prospects who are currently mocked to the Lakers, and I find that kind of interesting as a possibility there too.
When you were talking about the stretch five option perhaps in the Lakers center rotation, I was thinking that could be the 25th pick as well.
Yeah. And so I'm contrary to kind of my rap in this corner here. I'm not like completely doom and gloom, but I guess what I'm optimistic about is that, like, if Mark Walter is paying attention to the extent that we know that he is paying attention to this offseason, not just in terms of like the roster that the Lakers build, but also like the efforts to build out the infrastructure of the Lakers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's paying attention to all of this, and it hasn't gone swimmingly so far, right? They still haven't hired the assistant GM who's going to be in charge of the draft. And I know people say, well, they hired the dude from Virginia whose name I'm blanking on.
Tony Bennett.
I was thinking Gene Autry, and I'm like, no, that's a different singer.
Different singer. Yeah.
but that was something that was explicitly leaked afterward. It was like, no, Tony Bennett is just a consultant. He's somebody that we like to identify, you know, tough wing talent and stuff like that, but he's not going to be the assistant GM that we told everybody that we're going to hire. So like, my point is, I am cautiously optimistic about the offseason that they're actually going to have. But I'm also really optimistic about the fact that if this doesn't go to in the direction that it needs to go and to the extent that it needs to go, then the people who are responsible for that kind of disappointment, yes, I think would face real accountability really quickly. And that's something sort of that we have been begging for years. You know,
it's a win-win, bro. It's like either they knock this out of the park or they get their own people in there, right? Like, yeah. I do think that they like Pelinka more than people realize. Like, I know Pelinka gave a talk at the Dodgers invitation, right? To their people, right? And so I know they like him, but he's got to nail this. So it's, he either does or we got new leadership.
Let's really quickly roll through some of the super comments that we have here before you have to get up out of here, starting with the most important sound on the show. Fuck Washington! Always. All right. Jay Cooper writes, I think the big thing here is is when Luca's asking for a center, he didn't just say a center in the article. He was very specific. An A1 center, Mitchell Robinson, Time Lord are not A1, not even starters.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, like that's kind of what we were kind of trying to get to is I would love to know what kind of center that Luca is specifically kind of talking about here, what caliber. We know what type of center, but.
Mm-hmm. But, well, it seems he's explicit in that. I want an A1 caliber center. You can't get too deep into a list and call. Not everybody can be an A1 caliber guy, right? So he's asking for a fairly short list of players.
Yeah, but those guys aren't available. The league is smart and like the league is wisened up to the value of centers again, where they can create you possessions, they can limit the other team's possessions, they can score, they can they defend some of the most important shots on the court. Like everybody has now kind of dissipated from the center schmenter kind of talk.
They're the running backs of the NBA. Not anymore.
Nope. Let's see here. Greenlight Transport 8320, sign and trade Reeves for Durant, get Dort at shooting guard, get Grimes and Tybal for the bench, sign SL Luca. Starting lineup would be Luca, Dort, Smart / Rui, LeBron, Durin, two creators and better defense. I don't think Detroit would do that for Reeves. Mm-hmm, I agree. They really, really like Durin. They really believe in him. They are of the opinion, based on what I'm hearing, that they think this postseason was an outlier from the type of postseasons he's going to have from here on out. What was really weird about this postseason with Durin was that he stopped being utilized as a secondary creator. Like it was really weird. He was getting post touches over the course of the season and pinch post touches over the course of the season. And those just kind of completely went away. And I think that's something that Detroit would like to get back to. I think they see Durin a tier or two above where Reeves is at.
And they would also find themselves in a similar position to us in that if you were to trade Durin, you got to replace him. They'd need to have a good high-end five that if they traded for Austin, they find themselves in that spot where it's like, is Beef Stew our starter now? You know, like while I see the vision though from the like two jumbo creators and a bunch of defense around them, like that speaks to my question earlier of like, do you believe in this trio? Like I like that type of build a lot better. I just don't think Durin's gettable.
No. I think Detroit has made their decision on Durin one way or another. Sylvester Dog writes, what's y'all's thoughts on the AD reunion rumors? I'm not going to lie. I put his name in the trade machine last night.
Did you?
It was a moment of weakness, Pete. I had a couple of glasses of wine. I regret it somewhat, but.
I love AD. Man, if AD wasn't making $58 million next year.
And expecting a big contract beyond that.
Right. Yeah. Like that's all it is for me as a player. I think he'd be a great fit. I just think that it's a bigger version of the argument I was making earlier about Beef Stew, and that like if you allocate all those resources to that spot, you have nothing for anywhere else, right? And if you added AD to the team and then you wrote out what our roster would be and kind of what resources we would have left over, you'd see just a ton of holes. So between that and his injury issues, I would love it if there were any way you could get him for less. I would be all over that, but I don't see it.
A really, really, really funny conversation that is purely hypothetical that I would love to be a fly on the wall for would be Rob Pelinka telling LeBron, if you take the minimum, we can get Anthony Davis. Other than that, I don't see how that could possibly play out. He's just making too much money. And he's played barely more games than you and I have the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I don't want to completely disrespect Anthony Davis. No. I really, really respect and love Anthony Davis at his peak for the Lakers is legitimately one of my favorite players of all time. Like an absolute destroyer of worlds on both sides of the ball who honestly had a real claim to finals MVP, you know, and playoff MVP for the Lakers. Like if I knew I was getting 85% of that, sign me up. I would do it a zillion times out of 10. But I just, there's so many question marks about this dude, and he makes so much money that if it doesn't work out, there is zero escape route. There is no other way around it. Let's see. I think we got a couple more here. Greenlight Transport, 8320. You can't run it back with Luka, AR, and LeBron. Three creators and no defense. LeBron sells tickets. AR will have to go and sign a trade for Kessler or Durant. Well, that's the thing. Part of this too, Pete, I don't think Austin, whatever number that he signs at, is going to be untradeable. So I would rather, you know, give it another go with these guys, see if what we saw in March was real. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't, then recalibrate closer to the deadline, you know, at a time where what Austin brings to the table is really valuable for many, many teams. It just so happens that the Lakers have too much of that right now. Theoretically, according to this comment. And I understand it. I frankly don't even outright disagree with that.
Yeah, no, I share Greenlight's skepticism on that. I just, even if you do, I think that retaining the asset is still the move to make.
Yep. Let's see. All right. That is it. That is all right up against the right up against the finish line. Pete, thank you very much for hopping on and being flexible so that I could knock this out and watch Team USA a little bit later today. Anything that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
Nah, just catch me and Darius over on the LFR pod, and always love doing these, man. Thank you.
Thank you everybody for tuning in. That is going to do it for this week's episodes here in the lounge. Unless news breaks while I'm on the golf course tomorrow. Please don't do that to me. I'm not bringing my laptop. I will bring my little microphone so I can, you know, tweet a little offside video out or something if I need to. But have a great rest of your week, everybody. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. We will talk to you again on Sunday, hopefully. Maybe. We'll see.